From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Longtime listeners, this is the part of the week where the show features you. Asterisk. Usually three people. But this is the time of the week where we go through all the correspondences that we have received, all the emails, all the phone calls, and we share your stories with your fellow conspiracy realists. We're going to be talking a little bit about the slippery slope of framing a headline. We're going to be talking about some mysterious deaths, and maybe we start there because I'd like to make a clarification. Earlier this week, at the very top of the show, we mentioned the death of John McAfee. And if it's okay with everyone, I propose that we start there.
Yes, please.
I think another, we must.
Yeah, another person found dead by suicide in a prison cell.
I suppose it's possible that by now that, what do you call it, that kill switch or the dead hand will have been initiated. But I don't know. The guy's got a history of crazy behavior and drug abuse. So I also wouldn't put it past him to have just kind of led to his own demise.
Which this is why I just say, you know, in strange news, I had said, we want everybody to know that we are aware of this death and we are doing a full episode. We're still doing a full episode in the near future. We thought, given how many people had written in, it would be helpful for us to give a little bit of context, a little bit of background, point to some of the controversies and some of the conspiracies. So here we go. Just choosing two quick emails because I really enjoyed them. First, Thomas. Thomas, you wrote in with a title for your email that I quite enjoyed. It's The Death of Ya Boy, Y-A apostrophe B-O-I. And, you know, Thomas chooses his words carefully. He wants them to have the maximum impact, which I agree with. And here is his email in full. John McAfee didn't kill himself. That's it. That's the email. And we also have some people in the crowd who agree with you, Thomas, such as Kurt, who said, did you hear the unfortunate news that John McAfee took his own life? Or did he? I think this would make for an interesting news update or a full episode. Keep up the great work. Thanks, Curtis. And then he provides a little bit of context, a little bit of the concerns. This, of course, has shades of Epstein, right? Jeffrey Epstein, the child trafficker, serial abuser, networker with billionaires. When he was found dead, people were certain that he had been murdered and the scene of his death had been made to look like a suicide. We covered this in three different episodes in a series that still holds up today.
I love that book series, 50 Shades of Epstein. Really gripping stuff.
And, you know, the thing is that these cases aren't quite the same. They have some commonalities, right, that are being hit upon in a lot of media coverage and a lot of speculation. But when we look at the case of McAfee, you know, we learn that he was a very different person in comparison to Epstein. And honestly, you know, all the cards on the table, folks, I don't know about you, Matt and Noel and Doc, but I still feel like the official conclusion on Epstein's death leaves a lot to be desired. And there are some real questions that need to be answered concerning irregularities in the investigation, the prison guards, the hyoid bone. The list goes on again. You can hear them in our full episode. But today we are going to take a page from Curtis and Thomas and look at the death John David McAfee, to give you a bit of a primer before we do our full episode. So he was found dead on June 23rd, just a few days ago as we record this. And he was in the Bryans 2 Penitentiary Center, which is near Barcelona, Spain. His death came mere hours after the National Court of Spain had ordered that he be extradited back to the U.S. on criminal charges. And what's interesting about this right now, and this is an ongoing emerging story, is that while he was alive, on several occasions, he would say things like, if I'm ever found dead by hanging, it will mean that I was murdered.
Do you want to say exactly? He has a quote here from Twitter referencing Epstein.
Hit us with it, yeah.
He says, "Know that if I hang myself a la Epstein, it will be no fault of mine."
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He also had a post where he said, quote, "Getting subtle messages from U.S. officials saying, in effect, we're coming for you, McAfee. We're going to kill yourself." Yes, that's how he wrote it. And then he says, "I got a tattoo today just in case. If I suicide myself, I didn't. I was whacked with no E. Check."
Doesn't
my
he have
right
mad
arm.
Tattoos? Doesn't he have like full back tattoos or like lots of tattoos?
Yeah, that's what I say. The check my right arm part directly references a tattoo that he has in kind of a tribal style. He also, as you said, with the dead hand approach, noted that if I'm arrested or I disappear, 31 plus terabytes of incriminating data will be released to the press. He said that later. This dead man switch or dead hand is something we talked about before. It's the idea of taking posthumous revenge from beyond the grave by having a mechanism in place, which is not that hard to do, that requires you to check in on a verified regular basis of some sort. And if you fail to do that check-in on schedule, then it starts the ball rolling to a release of whatever juice or leverage you have over your enemies or whomever you is trying to kill you.
It could be something as simple as a scheduled social media post, you know, like we do stuff like that all the time, or even like a scheduled text message that like sends out to a group or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And 3 days before he passed away on June 20th, his wife said that Uncle Sam wanted him to die in prison. Specifically, she said, "John's honesty has gotten him into trouble with corrupt governments and corrupt government officials because of his outspoken nature and his refusal to be extorted, intimidated, or silenced. Now the U.S. authorities are determined to have John die in prison to make an example of him for speaking out against the corruption within their government agencies." And then, of course, that posthumous Instagram post that was an image of the letter Q. This has been, by the way, taken down afterwards. So you won't see it on his Instagram today. It's strange right now. The official conclusion is that he died as a result of suicide. Like, the autopsy results are back. They've been released. And they appear to confirm that he took his own life via hanging himself. But his lawyer said he didn't have any suicidal ideation. His family, obviously, as you can tell, is not buying the official explanation. But there's something else that happened just yesterday. I found this first in the New York Post, but you can find it in multiple sources. Apparently, there was a suicide note found in his pocket when he was discovered dead. You guys heard about that, right? Like, that just happened.
Yeah. Yeah, that was released. Was that with the autopsy report or the official reports?
Yeah. On the heels of it, yeah.
I don't know, man. Can I bring up a tweet that John McAfee's, the official McAfee, I think it's, yeah, at official McAfee, went out on May 27th. I just thought you guys might find this interesting.
Please.
Because I'm trying to analyze, I don't know, maybe the thoughts that are happening here. Many of the tweets are about how terrible prison is, mm-hmm. that you can find on that official Twitter account now. Stuff mentioning sorrow masked with, like, I forget exactly what it was. And you can find stuff like this one. Today, a man facing a difficult situation asked if I knew of painless ways to kill himself. Having little experience in such, I was of not much help. The amazing thing is that the tone of the discussion was like discussing the weather. Prison is a strange environment. Not that that has anything to do with his mindset and what he was going through. It is just, putting it out there that many of the other people, perhaps, that John was encountering were feeling like self-harm was perhaps an answer.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. And to clarify, he was being extradited for tax evasion.
Yeah.
It wasn't. That's another thing that differentiates it from like the Epstein case. He wasn't suspected at this point of the horrific crimes that Jeffrey Epstein and his network committed. Prosecutors specifically in Tennessee said that from 2014 to 2018, McAfee had not been reporting income and he had been evading taxes, and apparently he was making money hand over fist promoting cryptocurrency and doing speaking engagements. But you can find statements from him where he's like, I don't have some hidden crypto fortune. He objected to that. But the indictments were pretty heavy, and if convicted, he would have been in prison for up to 30 years. And if you know the U.S. justice system, then it's somewhat rare for people to serve the entirety of that time. But he still would have, no matter how you slice it, he would have been looking at years in prison, probably less than 30, but definitely wouldn't be getting out, you know, a week later.
True.
And he's... And he also on Twitter said he admitted to this, though. He admitted to the charges. He wasn't prevaricating or trying to make things up. He said, I have not paid taxes for 8 years. I have not filed returns. Every year I tell the IRS, I am not filing a return. I have no intention of doing so. Come and find me.
Dude.
Wasn't he also in trouble for like pump and dump schemes with crypto, with like altcoins and all that?
Yeah, and he's talking shade about Elon Musk on his Twitter account. Listen to this. Can I just read one more tweet from him? It's not pertinent.
He's a character, man. He was a character.
Very much. Is it January 3rd, 2019 tweet?
No, this one's from May 22nd of this year.
Okay.
It says, Bill Gates is sued for divorce because of multiple affairs and hanging with the Epstein crowd. Surely this is a joke. Bill makes Mark Zuckerberg look like a sex god.
Wow.
I mean, he really kind of went after him on a physical level there, didn't he? It attacked his manhood, you could say, right? His virility, even. That he's sort of an innocuous little guy.
Yeah, McAfee is definitely, the story of his life is filled with controversy, filled with crazy claims, crazy, not quite proven speculation, and then very, very wild, very well-proven things. I do want to give one more tweet here. On January 3rd, 2019, he said, quote, I have not filed a tax return for 8 years. Why? Number one, taxation is illegal. I mean, we should mention he was formerly aiming to be the Libertarian candidate for the presidency. Two, I paid tens of millions already and received jack shit in services. Three, I'm done making money. I live off of cash from McAfee Incorporated. My net income is negative. But I am a prime target for the IRS. Here I am. Like, there's some baiting going on here.
Oh, yeah.
There is?
Yeah.
But just if you're trying to think about his mindset again, he's saying all that, right? Then he gets caught. He's in prison. He's facing federal charges and extradition. May 23rd, day after the Bill Gates one, he says, I once had everything. After uncountable lawsuits and the reach of the feds, I now have nothing. But inside these prison bars, I have never felt more free. The things you believe you own, in reality, own you.
Sure. Which is, I mean, that last part is a philosophy that I think most people can agree with at some point in their lives.
What? Yeah, but just thinking about mindset, you can't definitively say anything from a series of, you know, tweets that are sent out by somebody. But, I don't know, maybe it's just interesting to talk about, and I'm falling prey to this, like, desire to speculate, but I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
I've always wondered too. I mean, surely the McAfee company has like a board of directors, or, you know, is it a publicly traded company? I'm not really sure. But with all of the negative press that he's received over the years, I mean, did he just sell it and they kept his name, or has he always been the head of this company and continued to run it in some form or fashion?
Yeah, good question. He resigned in 1994. He sold his stake in the operation, and then he proceeded to become one of its most ardent critics. And he was actually telling people, you need to uninstall any antivirus software from that company. I think it's bloatware. And he was against them using his name too.
Right. But my question is, why would they? I mean, like, for me, when I realized it was the same person, my mind was blown. I mean, because you think of antivirus software as being just that, bloatware and kind of like unnecessary, pretty ineffective software that slows your computer down, honestly, sometimes more than the things that it's trying to protect you from. And I'm like, how could this possibly be the same guy? I thought it was a joke. And then sure enough, it's not. But why do you think that the current company, you know, board of directors continued using his name, given the fact that he's outwardly attacking them and that he's just this kind of like really divisive character?
I think it's name recognition, because we have to realize, you know, back in the 90s, a lot of casual computer users probably wouldn't have known his life story. And then, as we'll find in the full episode, he had plenty of adventures ahead. Misadventures might be a better word. But from what I understand, and I'll need to do some more digging here, he was, at some point, McAfee, the company, tried to rebrand under Intel or something like that, and they ran into a problem. People who had already been familiar with this software under the name McAfee wanted to keep it, because if you change the name, they'll think it's something different, right? And then sales will plummet. And the bottom line is, you know, is the main focus for a lot of organizations of this size. But be that as it may, yes, there are a lot of strange things surrounding John McAfee's death, and the circumstances of his death, as well as the location, are making it tougher for Uncle Sam to seize his assets. That's some of the breaking news now. Earlier this morning, as we record, Bloomberg noted that the U.S. is going to have a tough time getting a hold of whatever assets they think he still possessed at the time of his death. So we're going to return to this very soon because, again, while there are arguably real suspicious things about his demise, his life itself is a story worth telling and worth exploring. We're going to run into some interesting things, some plot twists you may not expect. Look for that in the near future. And in the meantime, let's take a pause for a word from our sponsors. Be odd if it was McAfee, wouldn't it? And we'll return with more letters from you.
And we're back with Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, the listener mail edition. All the listener mail that's fit to speak on a podcast. That's our tagline.
I see what you're doing.
And it isn't really. Mm-hmm. But this is a thing, you guys, and it's something that I really didn't give much thought to until the Washington Post changed their tagline from something much more innocuous. I think it was like, "We dig deeper" or something like that, to "Democracy dies in darkness." You guys remember that? It was quite the news story. There's obviously a couple ways you can read that. You can read that as like, you know, in the absence of light, democracy will shrink and die. Or you can look at it as a crushing admonition of the Trump presidency. Obviously, they were at odds with each other, the Washington Post in particular, and also the New York Times. Trump would attack them frequently. So you could also just look at it as like a, yep, democracy is currently dying in darkness, because that is what we are in right now, is a dark age. But it's interesting because it really does have, you know, dual meanings. And it led me and also our listener, Feathercap, to wonder about the history of newspaper taglines. lines. So here's the letter from Feathercap. Greetings, longtime listener since 2018. Wow. Okay. Love the show. I was listening to Everything is Alive on Saturday, which is a podcast that I don't think I know, but I need to check it out. At some point during the podcast, I heard an interesting factoid. Newspapers have slogans. In this case, the guy mentions the slogan for the Washington Post, Democracy Dies in Darkness. I had no idea that newspapers have slogans. This could be an interesting topic, not a complete show, but a brief segment. I think others would be interested in hearing about newspaper slogans, history of best ones, worst ones, etc. Thanks for the amazing show. Keep on keeping on. Peace and love, Feathercap. I completely agree. Probably not a whole episode's worth, but definitely something worth discussing here briefly. I found a real cool article from CJR.org, that's the Columbia Journalism Review, that again references this dramatic Washington Post slogan change. And it kind of led them to dig a little deeper and go down the rabbit hole of where did these come from? NYU, they quote in this article by Tony Reagan, he quotes a professor from NYU's Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute. This gentleman also, his name's Mitchell Stevens, by the way. He also wrote a book called History of News. And he says this: newspapers and other products of the printing press were some of the first mass-produced products. Never thought about it that way, but it absolutely makes sense. The printing press allowed text and print and stories and news to be, you know, duplicated many, 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 many times. It was one of the first examples of mass production. He goes on to say, slogans on the ears of the front page were the most regular and visible way to advertise. He goes on even to talk about how during frontier times, there were small newspapers that would pop up. For example, if you think about the newspaper man in Deadwood, the TV show about the Old West, can't remember what it was, but pretty sure his little newspaper had a slogan. So, for example, they talk about in 1775, there were three different newspapers around the Williamsburg area in Virginia that were called the Virginia Gazette. But each of them carried a different tagline. The whole point was to differentiate your brand and make you stand out from the competition, oftentimes which had the exact same name. So this was crucial. One of them was containing the freshest advices, foreign and domestic. The other was open to all parties, but influenced by none. Really like that one. And then the last one was always for liberty and the public good. Of course, public spelled with a CK. But yeah, I don't know, guys, is this something you've ever noticed or really paid much attention to beyond when we obviously had that very, you know, soapboxy dramatic switch by the Washington Post?
Yeah, I'm interested in this because it's an argument for language, and it's also, there's something a little bit forensic about looking at the evolution of slogans over time. There's a cool article that you might enjoy, Feathercap, on theoutline.com by Adrian Jeffries that runs through this panoply, this wide variety of mottos. And you can find some funny history here. There are some that are, many are vaguely inspirational. Some are pretty ambitious. A couple are vaguely threatening. Some are just so confident. For a long time, apparently, the Chicago Tribune's motto was the world's greatest newspaper. And then later, there was an adult magazine called Screw. And this is all from that article. And Screw, when they started, they took the Chicago Tribune's motto. So if you were in the, you know, if you're in the dirty part of the bookstore, you would also there see something billing itself as the world's greatest newspaper. But this is all framing, right? This all matters. This is like a business card for these enterprises to assure readers of their objectivity and their commitment to credibility. And so people, I can only imagine, spend a lot of time thinking about economy of language, how to make the most impact, the smallest amount of words, just like our pal Thomas from earlier. There's some great ones. As a matter of fact, in this article, Jeffries includes the motto for her own outfit that she's writing for The Outline. And their tagline is, it's not for everyone, it's for you.
Oh, gosh. That's clever. There's a really fun one and an interesting change that kind of, I guess, is probably one of the most famous taglines, even if you don't know where it comes from, for the New York Times. Initially in 1896, Adolf Ochs, or Ochs, I think it's probably Ochs, O-C-H-S. He was a Chattanooga newspaper man, and he bought the New York Times, which was at the time actually going under. And he had a contest to see what the new slogan might be. And the winner was, "It will not soil the breakfast cloth." And I guess the implication the there is. The
breakfast cloth?
The breakfast cloth.
That sounds like a euphemism for something messed up.
Well, it sounds like shitting the bed or something, you know? I mean, like, really, it will not soil the breakfast cloth. Like, it's
for like, all you youngins out there, when you used to have breakfast every morning, you'd all, first, before you do anything, you'd roll out the breakfast cloth.
Then possibly with a sort of a checkerboard pattern design on it, you know, or some flowers.
We didn't have tables like aristocrats. Well, no, I'm also thinking like someone's like, "And if I had any regrets over the course of my long life, would be not sharing the breakfast cloth."
Oh, indeed. But the thing is
they're also telling you the ink is dried. That's what they're saying.
You're right. It is a quality control thing. They're attesting to the quality of their ink and their actual, like I said, it's not going to get your hands all inky, but they're also saying it's not spewing all the same kind of garbage that a lot of the yellow journalists like William Randolph Hearst's papers were. The Journal and Pulitzer's World, for example. Again, I'm pulling a lot of this information from this excellent Columbia Journalism Review article that you should read in its entirety. It was setting his paper apart from those, because that yellow journalism was all about salacious headlines and if it bleeds, it leads and all that stuff. And he wanted the New York Times to be much more like a thinking man's newspaper, you know?
Got it.
And so eventually he got rid of the breakfast cloth, which probably already wasn't aging particularly well.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I know, it really is. And changed it to, again, what's a pretty popular phrase that I didn't realize even was associated with the Times, which is all the news that's fit to print.
I'm over the moon about breakfast cloth. Like, it could be used for so many weird things. Like, why don't we make it a term of endearment? My little breakfast cloth.
My little breakfast cloth. It's a little weird.
I gotta give a shout out, Noel, though. My favorite so far of these, and thank you for taking us down this rabbit hole. My favorite so far of these comes from Mason Valley News in Yerington, Nevada, the site in the article you mentioned earlier. It is, quote, "The only newspaper in the world that gives a damn about Yerington."
It's brilliant. Noel, listen, when I go out there and I pick up my dollar, maybe $2 newspaper, it just depends on where I am, I want to know, is there a publication that is in any way threatening? Like, their slogan is specifically a threat. Does that exist?
Yeah, it does. It does, Matt. And I think you know it does. I think I'm going to need you to give it to us.
Well, if you're hanging out in Aspen and you pick up a copy of the Aspen Daily, as Matthew Cassell did, and then he tweeted a picture of it, you will find that this publication, the Daily Aspen, warns you and everyone who may pick it up, if you don't want it printed, don't let it happen.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, it's pretty great. This one, on the other hand, from the Detroit News, definitely feels like a threat, and it's, "We know where you live."
Fantastic.
Again, implication being, we know Detroit, which is where you live, but it's also vaguely sinister, like, we're coming for you, dear reader.
If you're a subscriber, yeah, that's hilarious. Wow.
I just sent you guys another one. This is fun. "The newspaper for those who can read." This is from Nasha, Canada.
Beautiful.
Yeah, this is fascinating. And also, I think you could argue that in this situation, some of these newspapers have made a little bit of false advertising, right? Or they've, newspapers do take a stance, a journalistic stance on any number of things. But it's fascinating because so much time and energy is spent in the mechanics of language for journalism. Like, I will always love a good snarky, trashy British headline from even like the very, you know, the papers of record and stuff, even those folks will go nuts, will get Susian with a good headline. And I think there's an art to it. You know, I think there's an art to it.
I completely agree. I have to issue a slight retraction. All of the other ones in this USA Today column were correct, but it appears that the Detroit News, "We Know Where You Live," isn't real. Every other one in here is real, and it doesn't seem to be a parody column. Very strange. It's by Jerry Mitchell from the Jackson, Mississippi Clarion Ledger. And the title is literally "Column Slogans, State of Newspapers, Truth in Changing Times." But I tried to Google it because it does seem just so perfect and bizarre. And I couldn't find any references to it. So I don't know. Doc, you're from Detroit. Have you ever heard of the Detroit News? We Know Where You Live?
Or the Detroit Free Press?
Well, the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press are definitely like the two biggest newspapers in Detroit. But I've never heard that slogan before.
Womp, womp, womp. Well, anyway, check your sources, Jerry Mitchell. I did. Anyway, but yeah, all of the rest of these are absolutely correct and real. And you're right, Ben. I mean, remember when, I don't know if they still do this, but remember when newspapers used to endorse a political candidate?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that something that still happens?
Yeah.
But some during, you know, I know because the Trump administration was quite divisive, they chose to abstain, I believe, or there was definitely some of that tradition was broken during that election.
Yeah. We run into this sometimes when we see something that's a national rather than a regional publication, right? So it's a matter of ethics and economics, I would posit. Meaning that you want to keep your circulation as high as possible across the nation, meaning that there are 320 million plus people who rarely agree on anything. And so you're definitely drawing a line in the sand if you say, hey, this is our guy, please stay subscribed to our paper. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's a safety thing, or maybe the just tenor of news has changed, because we have to consider, you know, with the rise of television, a lot of newspapers ended up taking a hit in circulation. And with the rise of online news or online sources purporting to be news, then what we found was that people were getting a lot of their news and reporting from television channels that already had well established their perspective and whatever bias they might have or wherever they sit in terms of the political spectrum. Like, it's obvious, right? Regardless of how you feel on the subject of which is right or which is wrong, it's obvious that Fox News is right wing, and it's obvious that MSNBC is left wing. So the argument would be that with television, they're getting news from sources that aren't objective, and the papers are trying to show that they are objective, even when that is not the case.
Which is so funny because, I mean, you know, it's not like CNN calls themselves a liberal news network or that Fox calls themselves a conservative news network. I mean, I guess they do sort of, but it's not front and center. It's just more something that you have to kind of like pull from their ideology that for certain networks can be more nuanced. Like, I always get confused, like, what is MSNBC? I think they're liberal, but I it's like, it's weird that we have to make that distinction almost in the same way that like we do with candidates, because it really is like a lot of different things taken in totality that make you that one thing or the other. And why can't it be like shades of that thing? You know what I mean? It seems like there's room for many political ideologies in the news, but I honestly, there shouldn't be any at all. It should all be objective, but there's always going to be kind of an agenda. And I think we see that with these taglines there. That's where they're sort of drawing their line in the sand, right? Like the whole, specifically some of the older ones where it was like, I think there was one that I mentioned that was implying that it was open to both parties, but leaning toward not one in particular. I'm obviously, they don't pay me to write newspaper taglines.
Oh, I got one. Podcasting. Read with your ears. All right, we'll workshop it. Never mind.
What was that one we did for Miller Lite, Ben? I think that was all you.
The beer's so good you can drink it with your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We gave that one to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Beer.
I think it.
Go ahead.
See, you like it. You like it, right, Matt? Now you're thinking of ice cold Miller Lite and putting your mouth on it.
It wouldn't be a segment if we didn't end it with a couple of pithy AI-generated slogans of our own, because that's something we definitely do all the time. I found a website called slogangenerator.org. So let's see what, if I type in, it only lets you put in one word. So for this one, I'm going to choose beer, and then I'd love each of you to give one, and we'll see what it comes up. So I hit generate slogan, and we've got, we dedicate ourselves to splendid beer. Matt, what you got?
So you can only do one word at
a word, time? One word at a time. Sorry. It's a very rudimentary slogan generator.
Magic.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Okay. Magic. Generate slogan. We know magic.
There we go. I found the same site. Is it overlow.com?
That's a different one. I'm just using slogangenerator.org, which is much more official because it's an org.
Yeah. So I'm going to try this different one. And I, let's see, I don't want to spoil the surprise, but I've got a good slogan for you. Okay. Breakfast cloth. Let the good times roll.
Yes. Let me try it on this one. Maybe it'll let you do two words. Breakfast cloth. Here we go.
Is breakfast cloth in you?
The breakfast cloth specialists. Okay, I think we've had enough fun with this. Let's take another quick break, and then we'll be back with one more piece of listener mail from you.
Well, hey, welcome back, everybody. This is the listener mail segment, and I've got a voicemail for us to hear.
Hey, this is Kyle in Washington. I got a shout out from you guys a long time ago, back when you did the plant intelligence video. I was wondering if you guys could look into the John Lane case in the Fresno police, specifically the cameras and the van. I want to know if specifically that was a thermal camera that they were looking at. I know that in Waco, evidently, like, the British were using, like, thermal cameras to look into the compound, and it'd be interesting to see if, like, thermal cameras have gotten that small now to where they can employ them in vans and stuff like that. So, like, that would be cool. That'd be a great episode, I think. I'd appreciate it. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, an old friend of the show. You know, that always makes my evening to hear.
That's right.
Hang out during the daytime.
Talon Washington was watching our videos when they were on the How Stuff Works YouTube channel.
Wow.
Yeah.
As before even my time.
Weird deep cut for everybody here. We used to put hidden messages sometimes. Not subliminal, just hidden messages into our videos, and sometimes we would shout people out. Sometimes we would send people on a bit of a rabbit hole about some extra information we didn't want to say out loud. Check out our videos to find those. We actually shouted out Talon Washington in a video, and I think it's the plant, how sophisticated are plants, maybe. Ooh. I can't remember the actual title on the old How Stuff Works channel. But anyway, we've known this person for a long time. It was great to hear their voice. And yeah. Talon is asking specifically about John Lang. That's L-A-N-G, who is a person who lived in Fresno, California, a person who died. Before we get into a lot of the specifics, guys, I want to jump to the official reporting from two outlets, ABC Channel 30 in Fresno, California, and the Fresno Bee. Also in Fresno, California. I'm going to read you guys a couple of articles from them, and it is the official story of what's happening in real time when this person, John Lang, died. Okay.
Isn't the Fresno Bee a jokey newspaper?
No, Fresno Bee is the Fresno Bee.
There was one from Fresno that I swear to God I found, and it was for another show, and like realized that it was totally bullshit and that it was like a satirical newspaper.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I just something triggered in me. I just remembered it was about wolf whistles. It was like a Ridiculous History episode we did. And there was one article we found about the reverse wolf whistle that was like women hollering at dudes. And it was this whole article. And I believe the Fresno Bee, and it was completely satirical, but it may have been just like a column or a particular. Please ignore me if I'm incorrect.
Fresno Bee, I believe, is owned by McClatchy. Okay. I think they're real.
Yep, good deal.
And the Fresno Bee comes into play in the bigger story here about John Lang. And I'm just going to go ahead and put this out there. I don't think we have time to cover this whole thing, but I'm going to take you through the story, let you see why it feels like we should be asking questions about this person's death. Okay, so here we're jumping first to ABC 30. There's an article called Man Found Stabbed in Burning Central Fresno Home. Inside, they describe how a man was discovered inside a house that was on fire. He was pronounced dead at the hospital. And there's a video you can watch on this article of the neighbor's reactions to what's going on. The smoke was first spotted by neighbors that were right around in that area. And apparently firefighters were just down the road doing a completely other call. They're like involved with other things when they got flagged down and the 911 calls started coming through. They went into the home, and this is important. The home had a large gate, large iron gate in front of it. Firefighters broke their way through, got into the house, found a man unconscious in the kitchen and bleeding from several stab wounds. Again, this is according to ABC News. He was taken to the hospital and pronounced dead there. And Lieutenant Joe Gomez with the Fresno Police Department said they didn't know whether the stab wounds or perhaps smoke inhalation from the fire ultimately led to this person's death. But they did say it was suspicious. Like investigators called the death and the whole situation suspicious. And they believe the house was intentionally set on fire. Okay.
Right.
So that's article number one. That was January 21st, 2016. Now let's jump to the Fresno Bee just a couple of days later on January 25th, 2016. This article is titled Man Found Dead After Suspicious Central Fresno Fire Identified. And the Fresno Bee says that this person is in fact John Lang, who was 51 years old. He had multiple stab wounds to his abdomen and upper back, according to the authorities. That's the Fresno Bee saying that. The body was found around 3:15 p.m., so in the afternoon. And again, he was not responsive, rushed to a hospital, and pronounced dead. And they again say it's unclear whether he died as a result of stab wounds or the fire, which damaged much of the home. So if you just know that, you know, a person is found in a house stabbed while the house is on fire, right? If anything has happened that was suspicious, I would say that was probably be it.
Well, also talk about adding insult to injury. I mean, if getting stabbed isn't enough and they set your house on fire.
It seems that way, right? And then there's an investigation with the Fresno Police Department. I don't know if the Sheriff's Department actually had anything to do with this, but the Fresno Police did. And here is what is published on April Fools, not for April Fools, but on April 1st, 2016, by, again, ABC Channel 30 there in Fresno. They said that the Fresno County Coroner's Office confirms that John Lang's death was a suicide. Okay. According to this article, coroners determined that the wounds were self-inflicted. And it actually posts the coroner's report and the full information here. You can find that. It's on ABC 30. Search for John Lang's death ruled a suicide. And you can actually read the whole thing if you want to. We are going to, and that's something we'll be looking at if we do indeed cover this more. They say that the cause of death in this case was inhalation of smoke.
Right, not the stab wounds, which people will argue were somewhat superficial. It's interesting, though, isn't it, that the initial statement from Fresno PD via the public information officer, a guy named Lieutenant Joe Gomez, initially Gomez says that he was killed by multiple stab wounds. And then it's later when that report comes out and they say, no, it's actually smoke inhalation because whatever fire was lit wasn't, it didn't ultimately destroy the building, right? It didn't turn into a structure fire.
No.
It's almost as though the house fire was like a diversion or like it was a knowing way of making it look like something else happened. I don't know. But isn't there, it gets weirder though, doesn't it, Matt?
Yeah. Well, yes, there's a potential for many different things in this story. I would say it gets very much weirder because the rabbit hole gets really deep on this one, guys. John really did believe that the Fresno Police Department, law enforcement in his local area, had a vendetta against him. And you can find his YouTube page if you search for it. It's, I believe, if you search for Lang Marine, M-A-R-I-N-E, L-A-N-G-M-A-R-I-N-E, you can find it. There are, well, I don't know, a couple dozen videos, maybe less than a little less than that, on that YouTube channel that you can view. It's all surveillance photography from his house. You can see the iron gate there. You can see the camera that Talon Washington mentions. Talon said, you know, is that camera thermal imaging? Or I believe something to that effect. Was it a thermal imaging camera? And this is a question that has just been nagging at me ever since he asked it, because I don't believe that I or anyone else can prove through that YouTube video if this is in fact some kind of thermal imaging device. Because in order to know that, you'd have to look at essentially the sensor. In this YouTube video that was posted April 16th, 2015, titled Thermal Imaging Threat and Intimidation by Fresno Law Enforcement. Again, those are the words of John Lang saying what he believes is in this video. You can see a van open that sliding door. There is a person holding a mobile rig camera system that definitely has glass on the front, some kind of lens, and pointing it what looks to be directly at the house where the camera is. And just to go back, the whole point is that I can't prove, nobody else can prove what the sensor was on that device, because all you can really see in this grainy YouTube video is the lens itself.
Yeah, it's interesting though. In like the caption, or I guess in the metadata for the YouTube video, he claims this was an example of Fresno, California sheriff personnel checking to see if he's home, so that they could then enter his premises illegally and find compromise on him, or like, I don't know what is he accusing them of in that department.
There is a huge story that is, it is told by John Lang in a series of social media posts on Facebook and other places, on the Fresno Bees commenting system on their site, as well as in these YouTube descriptions and comments and titles. There's a whole story that John Lang believed. Whether it was true or not, we can't say, we don't know, but he believed it. And then he met that demise. So, you know, if we do cover this, it's going to be about looking at his story, looking at what happened, and seeing what we can prove and what we can't, I think.
Oh, God. I mean, those comments you're talking about, Ben, he accuses an employee of the Fresno Bee of leaking his IP address to law enforcement.
Right.
That's one of the claims that he makes in one of these captions.
There's a lot of stuff that I want to say about this. In fact, we cut some of it. Because we're going to do a full episode on this. So already there are some clear rabbit holes. There's some badgers and bags here. Every life lost on some level is a tragedy, even if you don't care for the person who passed. And I think we can make a pretty solid argument that one of the best things you can do is have a clear understanding of what actually happened to someone, especially if, and we're not saying this is the case, but especially if a person is in a situation where the folks who took their lives are walking around free today. You know what I mean? There is something to be said for justice. This is going to be complicated. Talon, you know, you've stuck with us for so long, man. I feel like the least we can do is dive into this episode.
I think we should. I'm going to answer your question about the camera right now, though, because I can't tell you for sure what it was, but you asked if they were small enough, if a FLIR camera, a thermal imaging camera, was small enough to fit onto that rig. 100% yes.
In 2016, too, right?
Yes. If you right now, if you head on over to FLIR.com, FLIR.com, you can find something that is meant to be specifically used by law enforcement and other security forces called the FLIR breach. That it, this is something that you can attach to a lens, or you can attach to a rig. It's a sensor, basically, that can see thermal imaging. You can also find something called this Scion PTM, which is a monocle like this. You just hold up that uses thermal footage so you can see if somebody is inside a house or not, the way John feared that, you know, the law enforcement was doing to him.
One of those things you'll see a director looking through to frame a shot. Like, it's that small. It's like a tiny telescope, you know.
Now that is not what was you. That was definitely not what was used in that video, but it exists. If we want to talk about it being small enough, the other one, the FLIR breach, is more interesting to me. That doesn't mean it was necessarily a FLIR camera in the video, but on their YouTube, it shows how you can connect this thing up to monitors, because it seems to me that in that video with the van, you can see that they've got a camera and glass set up, a lens with some handles to hold it and some kind of monitoring situation there too. Who knows if that's what it was. The last site you can check if you want to, pr-infrared.com. On this site, you can find handheld and mobile thermal imaging products. And you can look through here. There are a ton of different ones, from FLIR and Pulsar and Envision and Infrared, Zeiss. There's a ton. Check them out. See what you see there. See what you think. And I look forward to discussing this further with you guys. And I just want to say thank you so much, Talon, for both, you know, leaving that voicemail and for talking to me on the phone. I had a really nice conversation with you.
Yeah.
Looking forward to this.
Feels like catching up with an old friend. You know, we've been doing this show for quite a while. And one of the reasons that we check in once a week with letters from you is because you are the most important part of the show. I know I say it all the time, but it's only because it's true. Can't happen without you. So thank you to Feathercap. Thank you to Talon. Thank you to Curtis. Thank you to Thomas. Thank you to everybody who has written in or taken the time to reach out to us, particularly with suggestions for topics you feel our fellow conspiracy realists will enjoy in the future. If you would like to take a page from your fellow listeners' book and contact us, we would absolutely love to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We are Conspiracy Stuff. We are also Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, and we're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. If you wish, you can also find our Facebook group. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. All you got to do is name a name, one or three, or a producer or two, or the whole crew, or just make Ben laugh and you're in. Lots of good memes and conversations to be had there. Oh, also, while you're on the internet, could you leave us a review? We would really love that. A positive one, please.
Yes, sure. Or you can leave us a vocal review. No, don't do that. Do it on the podcatchers. That helps the show more. But you can call us, because we have a phone number. It is 1-833-STD-WYTK.
You'll hear a brief message confirming you're in the right place, and then you'll have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes belong to you. Why not give yourself a sick nickname, the one you've always wanted? Let us know if it's okay to use your voice and your message on the air. Tell us what's on your mind, and if there's something that you would rather just share with the group instead of, you know, the whole podcast, that's fine. Just leave it at the end. Most importantly, don't censor yourself. You've got a 12-minute story. Don't try to make it 3 minutes. That's what went wrong with Game of Thrones. Type out your story in full. We read every email we get, and you can send it to us anytime, anywhere, where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.